Alrighty. So, for today, our agenda is a little complex. Shlishi of Pekudei is not the most commented upon Aliyah out of all the Aliyahs in the Torah. There are some points to make, but especially for us, we have similar themes discussed a few weeks ago in Parshas Tetzaveh, Shlishi as well. So, for example, the meal, which is talked about in Shlishi of Pekudei, we did spend some time talking about a few weeks ago, including branching out into the concept of Lashon Hara, for which the meal is a kapara. So both of those topics are topics we've spoken about recently, the meal and Lashon Hara. What I thought I might do today is we'll say a few nekudas on Shlishi of Pekudei for a few minutes, and then using also that meal Lashon Hara connection, not to necessarily repeat anything we said a few weeks ago, but to come at it from a different angle in anticipation of Purim. We're looking at Rosh Chodesh Adar, so maybe to consider a little bit the specific Lashon Hara issues that are presented by Purim spiels and the like, and to say a few words about that. And then maybe we'll spend a few minutes talking about Parsha Shkolim as well, which is actually a very lengthy topic, and maybe just touch on some of the highlights of that. So that's our agenda for today. So to begin with, so again, just a few notes on the psukim here in Shlishi. So the Aliyah begins by telling us about the Me'il. Vayasas ha-Me'il ha-Ifod, Masi Orei Kalil Techeles. Technical point, what does Kalil Techeles mean? So the Gemara says in Masechus Vachim that it means that it's totally Techeles. The whole thing is made out of Techeles. So it's not clear if there's much of a Chiddush in that statement. And the Torah Tumima comments over there that there's got to be some Chiddush because he doesn't think that it's the Derech of the Gemara to tell you things that are explicit in Psukim. So if that's what the Pasuk pretty much says straight out, he's not sure why the Gemara has to comment on it. My grandfather in his Haris on the Torah Tumima, this is one of his points of, I guess, sharper disagreement. So he just writes, what are you talking about? The Gemara does do that. Tosfos says in at least two places, Tosfos in Masechta Shabbos and Masechta Sivamis, that sometimes the Gemara does do that, that it just tells us things that the Psukim say somewhat explicitly. But the Torah Tumima assumes there's got to be a Chiddush, so he says, based on the Gemara in Masechta Menachos, and Afman Beis and Beis, that there the Gemara uses the phrase Klil Techeles to be understood as the Techeles is pure, it's not mixed in with anything else. So therefore, one could have thought here, that's what it means in this Pasuk. So the fact that it refers to the Beged itself, that the Beged should be completely Techeles, so that's a Chiddush. Okay, and to skip ahead a little bit to Pasuk Chaf Hei. So the Pasuk Chaf Hei talks about the bells. Says Vayasu Famone Zohav Tahor, Vayitno es Haponim, Hamonim, Besol Charimonim, Al Shule Hamil Saviv, Besol Charimonim. So the idea of having bells with parts that are gold, the Alshech in his commentary actually to Tetzaveh, again the link between the two, the Alshech says that the idea of using gold is that gold is the quietest of the metals. You can appreciate hearing metal clang outside just as we're saying that. So gold is a quiet metal, and it's there to be merames that the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen, should speak benachas, that he should speak in a soft way, so therefore his noise is a soft noise in order to make that point.
Meaning when it changes against them?
Yeah, that is used as a part of a bell, it's a relatively gentle bell.
The whole point is it makes noise so people know that he's coming in.
So you have to make a point. Well, it's not 100% clear what the point is. That's actually a little bit of a discussion also what it's meant to accomplish. But even for whatever point it is, so yes, it has to make a noise. But the question of the point of talking is also to be heard. But it's then even when you're talking, you want to be heard. But still, you can speak softly, you can speak with nachas. Right, well, I can't carry a big stick. That's a separate thing that you should do also. But you can be heard even if you speak softly. So too, you can have a bell that makes a gentle sound. That's perhaps the idea. Just be aware also here, go to Pasuk Chav Tes, we'll talk about the Avnet. So there, as is often discussed, there was a major machlokus Harishonim, it's machlokus really in the Gemara, Masechus Yuma, Daf Yud Beis and Aleph. It's not clear about the Shatnez. So here the Kohen Gadol had an Avnet that was made out of Shatnez, and that was apparently permissible for this purpose. But the question, what's not really clear from the psukim, as machlokes in the Gemara, was this just the Kohen Gadol? This is true about all the Kohanim. Whereas the Avnei made out of different things for the Kohen Gadol and for the Kohen, also about the Ksonis, there's such a discussion. So just be aware that there is somewhat of a machlokes about that. There is a very interesting, very unusual discussion about this next pasuk, so pasuk Lamed. So there the pasuk says, V'yasu es tzitz nezer ha-kodesh zahav tahor, Vayichtavu olav michtav pituche chosam kodesh l'Hashem. So they should write kodesh l'Hashem on it, vayichtavu. The language is plural. So is there any significance to the plural language? So the Moshe of Zakenim quotes from Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, a major chiddush. He thinks it's plural because he writes that in order to write the Shemos Hashem in a Sefer Torah and the Tefillin and Mezuzah, whatever it is, you need to have a minyan. It's a davar shem kedusha. So therefore, it's plural to indicate that there is a minyan there. It's an unbelievable idea, and does not seem to be our practice. Hi.
You say Shem Hashem is the Yud Kei Vav Kei spelling?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Gemara sounds like maybe it wasn't. So it's a Gemara actually with Daf Yomi not so long ago about how exactly it was written. But whatever the spelling is, that and that we'll talk more about, presumably, yeah, let's say the Yud Kei Vav Kei spelling. So then that needs to have a minyan. That's what his chiddush was. This is not a hanhaga. So we have to figure out why exactly that is. So Rav Sternbuch has a suggestion, a Sefer Tam Vidas. He suggests that the same way there is an idea that the Sofrim go to the mikveh before writing the Azkaros. So they don't go to the mikveh each time. They go to the mikveh in the morning, and then that's good for the whole day. So too, he says, maybe if they go to Shachris, and they say Kedusha with a minion, they hear Kedusha with a minion, so that has the same effect, and then that's good to go for the whole day.
I should do that as well.
A bracha, right, but then you have a makbid on a hefsek, so that's a little bit different. But here you say, if you say the tefillah is good for the whole day, so then maybe going to Shacharis and Kedusha is good for the whole day also. Hi.
Rav Sternbuch wouldn't say that just because he had a minion for Shacharis, you can say that Kedusha during, let's say, Mincha with a minion.
Right, presumably not, although that would be a very useful hetta sometimes. Right, it's an interesting idea. Presumably not. So the Sefer Otzer Plos HaTorah, which is a fascinating Sefer in general, so he writes that he spoke to Rav Sternbuch about this, and he said that he thinks he has a raya that it's not necessarily true, because the Magen Avraham says in Hilchos Brachos HaTorah that if somebody is writing psukim, is writing a sofer, is writing a Sefer Torah, and he's not focused on understanding the words at all, he's just interested in writing it, then he doesn't have to make Brachos HaTorah first. So the point is that apparently he's doing this before Shacharis. We're not necessarily makbid that he should go to Shacharis first. So he said that Rav Sternbuch responded to him that the whole thing is not really lahalacha. So apparently he's saying he didn't really think you had to makbid on this, but if you want a little bit of a svara, so then this could be the svara. But he's not going to make everything work, because he's not going to have a miyashiv every Magen Avraham with this, because it's not a real din. Rav Nassim Gishtetner and the Laharis Nassim on Chumash, so he points out the whole thing is a pella, because this whole focus on the plural language, all of the psukim is a plural language here, is talking about what is done. This is what people in general do in constructing the Big Day Kahuna and the like, so it's hard to see why there should be any significance given to the plural language. There is a sefer called Eish Tamiz, written by Chashan Tamar Chacham from Brooklyn, by the name of Rabbi Shlomo Sinneman. So he thought that maybe you could say differently, that maybe if you do want to pay attention to the plural language in the Pasuk, aside from the clearly not accepted Chumrah of the Yehuda HaChassid, that maybe you could say that it's a reference to something else, that the Gemara Maseches Yumman Daf Lamed Ches talks about the fact that there was a person named Ben Kamsar who Chazal criticized. They were upset with him because he didn't want to teach anyone else how to write the Shem Hashem B'Vas Achas. He knew how to write all the four letters B'Vas Achas. So the question is, what's so great about that? You know, why is that a skill that's important to have? So Tosfos Yontif writes that it's useful because it conveys the message of Yichud Hashem. Clearly it's not Ma'akev, clearly you can have Sefer Torah without having the skill, but maybe it's a Ma'ala because it conveys Yichud Hashem, you write the whole name, is not a process at all, that happens kind of instantaneously. But there are
so
other...
you can't write Yehuda instead of Yud Kei Vav Kei.
You mean because you don't have enough fingers?
Or if you're writing it all at the same time, you can't do yud k and then.
You won't do it accidentally. It'll prevent it. Okay, yeah, that's also true. The Kli Chamda in Parshas Re'ei, so he suggests that maybe there is another Mila, that maybe on some level it's a little bit like Mechikas Hashem, because if you write the first two letters, so that's a self Hashem Hashem. Right? If you write a Yud, and then you write the after letter Hey, so you already have Hashem Hashem. So then, if you're going to follow that with another letter, so now you've changed it from meaning Hashem Hashem to something else, because that's the process, but in the middle it doesn't mean anything really. So then, that is maybe some form of mechika. Maybe that's like erasing Shem Hashem. So therefore, clearly it's mutter, because the Torah tells us to write it, and that's the only way we can do it. But maybe there's a maila if you could do it differently, if you could do it all at once, so that you don't have this issue of mechika at all. So maybe that's a better way to do it. So maybe that's why this skill was significant. And maybe that's why they were upset at him for not teaching anyone else. And then he thought that maybe the plural language of the pasuk is not talking about a minion, but maybe they had multiple people do this so that you wouldn't have this issue. But then that's a little bit different. Is that really called, is that acceptable as a sefer Torah? You can have different handwritings. Maybe that's a psul of menumer. So he goes into it a little bit about discussing whether or not that would be advisable or effective or good. Is there such a concept? So maybe that might be an additional diuk that might be gleaned out of this plural language. Hi.
I just wanted to say, if you really thought that was a problem in the chika issue, you wouldn't have to get around it. You wouldn't need to do the trick of writing all four letters at once. If you could just do those two letters, the hey and the vav, at the same time, it would already
right.
be a
so problem. He only has half the skill. It isn't.
Right.
He was half as talented, he could have
around that problem.
Right, so he should have taught it he should have taught half of his talent. Exactly. Chatzi Shira should have taught half his talent. He could still be the chashuv one. It could still be the ideal service, and it would still be able to convey.
Can you write a Sefer Torah out of order?
So Sefer Torah you can, but this is what seems to be applicable to Tefillin and Mezuzahs also. So that's part of the issue. He discusses that in the Eish Tavid's question of whether that would be called Shlo Kisidron or not. He thought apparently it's not considered Shlo Kisidron for one person. That's what the Gemara is talking about, one person doing it all together. So he thought that maybe that's comparable to a tfus, you know, like a printing press, which apparently is not an issue of Shlokas Digion either. That's the debate. If you're familiar with the silk screens, Sefer Torah and the like, so a question of whether there's any possibility of using a press to write a Sefer Torah that Koran writes. Is that called, is that apparently one of the issues, whether that's called Shlokas Digion or not? So Shlokas Digion, we are mocked on for a tefillin, but not for Sefer Torah, which is very, 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 very important kula, because if there was a halacha that Sefer Torah has to be written in Kisidron, we'd be in huge trouble, because every time one letter becomes puzzle, you'd have to rewrite the whole thing, and you'd bankrupt all the shuls very quickly. And clearly, that would not be an affordable way to live. So the fact that we're able to fix one letter at a time on a Sefer Torah when it's out of order is very, very incredibly important reality. Okay, so then we'll just comment on the last pasuk in the Aliyah and then talk about the other topics you mentioned. So the Aliyah ends, pasuk Lamed Beis, with the words, Vatechel kol avodas mishkan ohel moed, ve'yasu v'nei Yisrael kechol asher tziva Hashem es Moshe keinasu. So as Zalman Saretskin points out in this Nine Torah, you would have thought that the order is a little bit out of place, that they should have said that v'yasu b'nei Yisrael k'chol asher tziva Hashem. They did everything and they finished the avoda. So why is it the other way around? They finished the avoda, and by the way, they did everything that God commanded. So some of the mafarshim understand that that's actually a reference to mitzvahs in general, that they kept all the Torah. So that's very nice, but then what's that doing here? Why is the pasuk conveying that in this context? So he suggests an important point. He says that all of us, we have potential to do good things and to do bad things, but habits have a tremendous influence, that if we do good things and we're on a roll, so then we're likely to continue doing good things, and we have a harder time doing bad things. We want to maintain our momentum. And the same is true in the other direction, that if we do bad things, so then it's very hard to change away from that, and it's hard to reverse course. So after the Chet HaEgel, so the Jews were in a bad state. They had a chazakah of not behaving in a productive fashion. So therefore, the concern was that following that, they're going to have a hard time writing their course. But then after they did all the Avodas HaMishkan, so then they're on a good roll, so then they are able to continue behaving properly after that. Hi.
Just a comment to Rabbi Yaakov and Emsa Yaakov. Seems a very similar idea on why Rabbi Yaakov starts off with, in his other words, that Moshe, Rabbi Yaakov, whatever, fine.
Gathered
so the he says that after the, before the Cheder Ego, the Gemara and everything else is Kisha Chalulevo, that they're buried together. And then after the Ego, the Gemara also says that apparently they each made their own Ego, each Shevet, they were very separate from each other. Even together for that. So afterwards, the Torah wants to emphasize that they got to, together to do a tachlis, you know, like, some goal to get back on course and to build a Mishnah. So
using the Koach Ha'achdus, which is also relevant to other things, as we'll see in a second. That might come. That idea might come back. But in any event, so then he goes on to say a little bit further these Nayim Torah than the pasuk that goes on to say V'chein Asu. That there's an issue, that there's an idea that from the Mishkan they learned how to behave properly, learned to midos tovos, which is an idea that I've been emphasizing over the past few weeks, that there are all kinds of sodos and ramazim and themes that are contained within the Mishkan, and that studying them is supposed to have an effect on our overall behavior and our overall attitudes. And therefore, the pasuk is perhaps emphasizing that, that because they were involved in the Mishkan, so then now their whole life is different, that their whole attitude is improved, and everything that they do is with a different type of sensitivity. So with that, let's take a moment again to go back to the topic of Lashon Hara that is connected to the meal. We spoke about that a few weeks ago, about how the meal is meant to be a kapara for Lashon Hara. So we'll just say another few words about Lashon Hara in anticipation of Purim. So there is a controversial practice known as the Purim Spiel. And there are many poskim who have written tshuvas against it, Rav Vadi Yosef, Rav Sternbach, Rav Pam. There's a number of written essays against the Purim Spiel. While on the other hand, there are minhagim to uphold the Purim Spiel, including an Ar Yeshiva, so we have a hallowed tradition of the Purim Spiel, which goes back to Volozhin. Ar Yeshiva, as Shechter has pointed out in other contexts, Ar Yeshiva was founded by people who came over from Volozhin, so therefore, presumably, in all things, we follow Volozhin and Minhagim. So in Volozhin, it's written in the Svarim, it's written in the history books, that they had a Purim Spiel there as well. In one of the books, it's written that at one point, the top student in Volozhin, his name was Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, and he did a spot-on imitation of the Netziv. So it sounds very familiar from our Purim Spiels. And that many decades later, so the top student in Merkat HaRav was a great-grandson of the Netziv, and he did a spot-on imitation of Rav Kook. So Rav Kook said, okay, the great-grandson has paid me back, you know, for the, this is the tradition. So in some yeshivas, they have a tradition of Purim Spiels, and we've continued that tradition. But on the other hand, you can understand why it's controversial. You can understand why there are poskim who are against it. On the one hand, there are issues of Kavod Torah that might raise a concern. But even if we're not dealing with Talmidei Chachamim, then there's issues of potential Habanus Pnei Chaver Barabim and Lashon Hara, which are exacerbated by concerns of Kavod Torah as well. But even without that, so there's a clear reason to worry in terms of the potential for embarrassing people and for Lashon Hara. So the first answer is that you have to be careful about that in the Hanami, that the shpil should really be done under rabbinic supervision, because you have to make sure that they are done properly, because there is a tremendous michshol that's potentially connected. However, that being said, so if you're careful, so what is the working theory here? What is the license? So you might say, well, listen, it's all a joke. It's not a chashash Lashon Hara. So the problem is, if you look in the Rambam and in the Chafetz Chaim, so they both paskin that Lashon Hara Daras Chok is still awesome. That either it's Avak Lashon Hara or Lashon Hara Mamish, but that it's still prohibited, even if it's Daras Chok. As an aside, I just want to emphasize that sometimes people who harass other people, so they sometimes defend themselves by saying it's just a joke. So it's hard to see why that's a defense, because if it's not a joke for the victim. So then why should it help that the person doing it thinks it's a joke? That just makes him a sadist. The fact that he enjoyed it, he found it funny, is very hard to understand why that's at all a mitigation of the issue. That would really seem to make it worse. It's a joke if both parties think it's a joke, but in general, it's hard to see why that's a defense. Although, when it comes to Lashon Hara, there's a little bit more to work with. You could have said that, listen, Lashon Hara is all about disparaging the other guy, and if I'm not serious, I'm not really, I don't really mean it, so then maybe that does make it less of a issa. Maybe that should make it less of a problem. So, it's not a crazy thought, but again, that's not what you find in the Svarim, that the Lashon Hara Daras Chok, you find is still a concern. So that does not seem to be our heter here. So what is our heter? So then you might say, okay, the heter is mechila, that the people who are involved, we know, especially, maybe we should be careful to make sure that that's the case, or implicit or explicit, but that the people involved are all mechil, they're all okay with it. The problem is that doesn't really work either so well, because you find that this is a concept in Hilchos Purim. It's also going to be Daf Yomi, it's a Tosfos and Sukkah, and Daf Menhei, it's coming up in about 3 weeks, a little bit after Purim. There is a discussion in the Rishonim that applies to Purim or Sukkot or Simchas Chasam Vakala. They say there are certain environments when people are celebrating a mitzvah, and that there is an implicit understanding between the people that they're mochel on minor hezek, on minor gezela, that if a part of the celebrating on Purim or at a wedding, so you grab something away from somebody, which may technically be gezela, or you spill some wine on their carpet, so then it's nezikin. But the attitude is, we're mochel on such things. We know that if we're going to say that I'm going to sue you if you drop a drop of wine on my carpet, so you're not going to have much of a Labor Day party. So people want to be able to celebrate, so there's an understanding that they're not going to be makbid on these things, and that seems to be based on mechila. It's important to know, because there is a Gemara in Bava Kama, I think we talked about it a little bit when we were talking about Hanukkah last semester, and I might have mentioned this, because the same Gemara talks about hezek that's done from a Hanukkah candle. So the Gemara says that, in general, if you're running around with Shosar Rabim and you damage something, so you should be chayiv. But on Erev Shabbos, when there's a mitzvah, so it's ratz b'rishus. And similarly, that if your Hanukkah candles catch fire on somebody's straw that's being carried by their camel, so again, it's your pater for that. So there are some who say, oh, you see that there is an exemption from nezikah and your pater if you're involved in a mitzvah. So others say that can't be. The Chavos Yair has a truth about this. His later Svarim, right, some contemporary Svarim say that if there's such a principle that you're always pater if you're involved in a mitzvah, so then everybody's going to have to walk around with body armor all the time, because who knows, so somebody's going to knock them over because they're running on the way to a bris or on the way to a shir. Who knows what kind of mitzvahs people are running to, so you have no protection from anything. So it's hard to believe that's really true. So the Chavos Yair has a yisod, which many accepted. Chassam Sofer argued on some of the details, but many accepted this principle, that the Gemara doesn't mean to say that because you're involved in a mitzvah, you're patur. That taka would be very hard to deal with, just as he says, that it means that we understand that there's a balance of responsibility between the mazik and the owner of the property. So if somebody leaves his iPad in the middle of the highway, and then somebody else drives his car over it, so we understand that it was the owner's responsibility not to leave it there, and that the driver is not liable for this. So the Gemara is saying that, in general, there's a responsibility on the mazik, but sometimes when you know it's dangerous, so then there's a more of a responsibility on the nizak to make sure that he protects his property. So on Erev Shabbos, or on Chanukah, when we know Erev Shabbos, people are running around like crazy, so then there is a greater responsibility to be careful and watch out for people who are running around Erev Shabbos. On Chanukah, you should know that there are candles that are going to be outside people's houses. But a mitzvah that's stam, a personal mitzvah, and you don't have the expectation that people are going to know what's going on, so then there isn't necessarily any exemption. So this also is clear in this context in Hilchos Purim, because there, we don't just say, oh, they're involved in Simchas Purim, Simchas Sukkos, whatever it is, so you're pater because of the mitzvah. But we say that the Torah is based on the mechila, it's based on the fact that people understand that there's going to be a little bit of a leibedikness, and that there's going to be a possibility of some minor damages, and they're mochel. But even within that, There's a tshuva about this in the tshuvas Netzach Yisrael that was written by Rav Grossman, who was the father of the disco rabbi, the father of Yitzchak David Grossman. So his father wrote the tshuvas Netzach Yisrael. So he discusses there in the context of Purim that this is the idea that not that because it's a mitzvah yipater, but because there is this understanding, everybody's moichel, so then that is effective. And even so, the Rama writes that it's appropriate to still offer to pay anyway, even if Beis Din won't force you to. And if it's a serious hazik, it's not just that you spilled some wine on the carpet, but you trashed this whole apartment, so then it's not clear there would be a p'tur, that this p'tur probably only applies to minor, predictable types of damages that may happen with a regular type of apartment. So you could say, all right, so we find in the context of Purim that we're muffled each other, that we want to be able to have a good time. So there is a spirit of mechila that people are not going to be so makbid on things. So that might help, but probably not, because it's not clear that mechila works for something like this, for halbanas b'nei chaver v'ramim, because that's something that we call tzar shebegufo, which would mean that it's personal anguish the person goes through, and mechila generally doesn't work in such a case. What do you mean when you say mechila doesn't work? It doesn't mean that the next day after Purim, when a guy comes and apologizes to you for hurting your feelings, that you kept him moichel, but it doesn't work. That kind of mechila after the fact for sure does work. When he comes there, Erev Yom Kippur, and yes, for mechila, of course it could be mochel. But it means that advanced mechila, where you say it's okay, you can do whatever you want, so we don't rely on that when we're talking about tsar shebeguf, because we assume that people are not always able to predict how they're going to feel. And they think they're okay with something, and then they realize they can't stand it anymore, so they're going to revoke their mechila. And they're allowed to, that the mechila isn't binding when it's a situation of tsar haguf. So that's probably not the answer either. So it's probably not that it's lashon hara darach tzchok, and probably not that there is mechila. Although maybe these elements help in some way, but that's not the full answer. Neither of those seem to be the full answer. So what is the full answer? So I think you could say as follows, that there is, and this is a major topic in itself, I don't remember if we talked about this a few weeks ago, it's a fascinating sugya, you could spend a lot of time on it. But the Gemara has this mysterious heter of Ape Tlasa by Lashon Hara. The Gemara says that if something is said in public, no Lashon Hara. I'm translating it clumsily because of the big machlokas we've shown him what the context is and what the words actually mean. But some of the Rishonim interpret it to mean that if somebody says something in public, instead of just saying it in private, so then it's not subject to Hilchos Lashon Hara. It's very hard to understand. You'd think, for sure, it's Lashon Hara, it's worse Lashon Hara. More people hear it. So there's an equally baffling Gemara in Maseches Erchin. That Ape Tlas appears in Erchin and Baba Basra, and in the Gemara in Erchin, there's an equally baffling statement where the Gemara says that Kol Milsa Des Amras Ape Mara Las Behu V'Shum Lashon Abisha, that if something is said in front of the subject, it's not Lashon Hara. So once again, you think, what are you talking about? It's worse that I'm not only speaking Lashon Hara, I'm also being Malbim Pnei Chaver Barabim, I'm also embarrassing him. That should be worse Lashon Hara. And in both these cases, by the way, public and in front of the person, so you think that it's worse, you're in good company, because the Chavetz Chaim writes in both cases that Lashon Hara is bad, and it's worse if it's in public, and it's worse if the guy is there. So what's going on? So how is it that the Gemara has these statements? So Tosfos, in both places, Tosfos has an explanation which explains that this is really a very narrow context. This is really a very limited context. That we're not talking about somebody who's actually saying bad things, who's actually disparaging somebody. We're talking about somebody who's saying something that could be interpreted positively or negatively. And he means it positively, but it could be interpreted negatively. So really, you think he shouldn't say it because he might be misunderstood and then that'll be a disparagement of his friend. So Tosfos says, you're right, such a thing you shouldn't say, except if you're saying it in public or you're saying it in front of the person, so since you're a decent person and you wouldn't want it to get back to him or you wouldn't want him to hear it while you're saying it in front of him, so then we can assume that people will know you mean the positive interpretation and you can trust that it'll be taken positively.
So
but if
what
you,
in terms of
Ape Tlasa?
Yeah.
Well, the Chavetz Chaim actually says that because there's so many different opinions what Ape Tlasa means, we should be very, very careful in applying the whole heter because it's such a complicated topic, and there's so many conflicting views in the Rishonim, which we could talk about at a different time because it's a fascinating sugya by itself. There's a lot to say about it, but it'll take a long time. But just the Hanegeya L'Inyanenu, so the Yisod that comes out from Tosfos is that there are certain contexts where something that could have been Lashon Hara is not taken as Lashon Hara because the context shows you that it's not meant negatively, that it's not meant to disparage. So perhaps we could argue that if we've cultivated the proper environment in the context of the Purim Spiel, so maybe that's true as well, that the atmosphere is such, and especially because the subjects are there and they are laughing and participating, that the audience sees that this is not an attempt to actually disparage any of the people involved, but that's an expression of affection as it's meant to be conveyed, and it's not going to be taken negatively. So just to emphasize, to say that people are there laughing, so that maybe could have helped to imply that they're mochel, but like we said before, it's not clear how much mechila really helps. And it's also not clear if that's genuine mechila, because the person might act that way because he doesn't want to be a spoilsport, doesn't want to look like he's too makbid when really he is makbid. So it's not so clear that you can really rely on that as mechila. The point is not so much that their presence and their laughing presence is mechila, but hopefully the other way around, that the fact that this is being done in their presence and they seem to be enjoying it is an indication that the people who are doing it in an affectionate sense, and that it shouldn't be taken negatively. And perhaps that's the Yisod, we have to work all year long to make sure that that's the atmosphere, so that per night everything's taken in the proper context. But maybe that's the idea. So Jonathan's up first, Nishmoli.
Does that mean, Lamaisa, for a Purim Spiel, that you have to have every person making fun of, or in a nice way at least, has to be there?
No, I think it helps. So I think it's a good cloud, because that's a good way to keep things, to keep things straight. So it's not bad advice. I'd say that it's absolutely required, no, but in general, it could be taken as a simon that everything is meant in good fun and not meant to disparage the person. You know, in a sense, it really does draw directly on Tosfos' understanding of the Ape Flasa Heter, that something, or the Ape Mara Heter rather, that something that's done in front of the person when you're dealing with nice people. Clearly nowadays we have a whole different environment. Without getting into the internet culture right now, it's a whole different topic. But in the time of Tosfos, in the time of the Gemara, it was assumed that people who would do this in front of the people they're talking about, they don't have anything too negative in mind. So perhaps I wouldn't say you absolutely have to, but it helps. It definitely, it makes a statement. Yeshivas have different policies about that, about whether you have to clear specifically only certain individuals or fair game. That's itself a whole discussion, but that's, it's not a bad policy. I would say it's absolutely the only way to do it, but it's a good simon. So the second question, and Shmuley goes first. Shmuley, yeah.
When we assume mechila, we're assuming that mechila comes before this whole production, correct?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know if we can rely on mechila, because even if there was a mechila, then it's not clear that it's binding, so to speak. That mechila on Sar Shabaguf, it's not clear that there is such a thing. That you can be mochel after the fact, you can apologize and he can forgive you, but to say in advance that you have a free reign to do whatever you want because he says mochel, yeah, there's some logic to that. Clearly there is a difference between people who are makbid and people who aren't, and you know, that certainly does mitigate things when it's genuinely there, but it's not a reliable foundation, because theoretically if you actually do end up being mevaz of the person, so then the mechila is not effective, and the aver is still there and still dangerous. So I wouldn't say mechila is completely irrelevant. There's certainly a difference between people who are makbid and people who aren't makbid, but it's hard to say that that's the whole basis of allowing. Hi.
I know, for example, there's one rav in YU who feels it's a whole big problem of kavod Torah. Mm-hmm. So if he's not going to be mochel, let's say for his own embarrassment, but if you do let's say invitation of him, and you know he's not going to be mochel on his kavod Torah, so that doesn't automatically preempt you at least for his.
I think yeah, if you know this person's makbid, then you shouldn't really betray them. Again, you know, shivas have different ways of handling this, but it probably is a good policy that you should exclude people who are makbid from being betrayed. Okay, so now let's just say a few words about the Shkolim just for a few minutes. So we begin the Dalet Parshios this week. Dalet Parshios, as we'll discuss a little more in a second, so we assume these are four special Kriyas HaTorah, which each one has its own reasoning. It's interesting, they all fall around the same time of the year, but each one has its own story. And so Shkalim has its own story, Zachar for sure has its own story, each one has its own reason, but they all appear around this time of the year. And this week's, the case of this week's Parsha, so it creates a little deja vu, because we read probably the beginning of Parsha's Kisisa, so it hasn't been that long. It's pretty familiar in our minds, Parsha's Kisisa, just 2 weeks ago. So that actually could affect a halachic issue. So our practice of taking out 2 Sifrei Torah for this, or theoretically 3 if it was Rosh Chodesh as well, but the practice of taking out 2 Sifrei Torah, so why do we do that? So there's a whole tshuva about this. There was a discussion in the Sefer, there's a contemporary Sefer called Ole Yaakov on Shmos and on other things. So in the Sefer on Shmos, he discusses a Shaila L'maisa, that there was a minyan where they forgot, or whatever, the other Sefer Torah they had wasn't set in the right place, and it was in Varim, so they just took out the Sefer for the Parsha, for whatever week it was, let's say it was Pekudei, and then they rolled it to Kisisa. So somebody was Meichi, you can't do that, you have to take out a separate Sefer Torah, so they took out the second Sefer Torah, and they had to do a much bigger job to move it from Dvarim to Kisisa. So this may have been totally counterproductive or not, depending on what the reason is. Because the most commonly understood reason of taking out 2 Sifrei Torah is the issue of Tircha de Tzibur, that we don't want to have the whole Tzibur waiting around when you move from one place in the Sefer Torah to the other. So that's a little bit of an argument to say that maybe when it comes to Shkalim, it's not necessary at all, because the Parsha, whichever Parsha it is, tends to be a Parsha very near to Kisisa, and therefore it's not such a big deal. But this case really illustrates it, that if it was a choice between just moving the Torah that they were using from Pekudei, let's say, to Kisisa, or moving the second Sefer Torah, taking out another Sefer Torah, and then moving it from Dvarim to Kisisa, so then clearly there's far greater Tircha Zibur in that than in just using one Sefer Torah. However, there are those who maintain that the purpose is that you want to give every separate kriya its own chashivas, and that maybe especially with the Dalet Parshas there was such an inyan. So that was the svara that was invoked in that context, and there are poskim who agree with it, that said, yeah, even though it means a greater Tircha Zibur, it was still worth taking out a second Sefer Torah in order to do that. But the most commonly invoked svara is that it's about Tircha Tzibura, and therefore it would seem that in the situation just described, that it would make sense to just move it from Pekudei to Kisisa, and not take out a second Sefer Torah, which has to be moved from Dvar. But in any event, once we do that, so why are we reading Shkalim in the first place? So you find different reasons. The Bavli in Maseches Megillah understands the reason to be that it's because on Rosh Chodesh Adar, Mashmir Mal Shkalim, that at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, so they would make the announcement around Rosh Chodesh Adar time, that, or around Rosh Chodesh Adar, and we do Shkalim close to Rosh Chodesh Adar, to tell people that you should bring your Shkalim to the Beis HaMikdash, under the understanding that a new Beis HaMikdash year was about to begin in Nisan, and therefore we have to start collecting, so make the announcement, get out the word. The Gemara in the Yerushalmi in Megillah connects it to a different idea. The idea is in the Bavli as well, but the Yerushalmi connects Shkalim to this, that the Gemara has expression there that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw, so to speak, that the time would come when Haman would take Shkalim about his plan to destroy the Jews, and therefore God said, "Mutav sheyaktim kaspan shel banai lekaspan shel sarasha." So therefore, we have a kriya of shkalim before Purim. So what exactly that idea means about Haman, we'll come back to in a second. But it's interesting, these two different ideas as to what exactly is motivating it. And then there's a whole discussion about, so nowadays our reading of shkalim, so what is that meant to do? So is it that there was always a kriya of shkalim and we continue that? Or is this shkalim a zeichel beis hamikdash? So there was a whole discussion about whether or not they did shkalim, the red parsha shkalim in the time of the beis hamikdash. that the Mishnah says that they would announce the Shkolim at the time of the Beis HaMikdash. But did that mean that they laned it like we do, or they announced it and we lane it in order to evoke what they did? The Sefer Pritzadik, Tzadik HaKohen, so he has rayas, he thinks that they did lane it in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. So he says, so why should they do that? So we do it maybe to evoke their announcement, but why did they have to do the announcement through a kriya? So he quotes a Tanchuma, the Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu felt, believe it or not, that he wasn't going to be remembered in history. He says, they're going to forget about me. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu said to him, don't worry, the same way that you're standing up now and telling them about Shkolim, so too, they will always, for all the generations, quote you and talk about Shkolim and remember your presence. A very striking idea, if you think about it, about the whole idea of the Hemshech between Moshe Rabbeinu and the later generations, and Davka coming through here, there's probably a lot to think about as far as that's concerned. But in any event, so that was a question whether they did it that way in the Beis HaMikdash or not. But nowadays, so we lane Shkolim for sure. So whether we do it l'zecher what they did, or we do the same thing that they did, or possibly zecher l'machsa shekel itself. That's what it sounds like from the Sefer HaChinuch, that we do it as a testament to the Machzis HaShekel itself, and not just to the idea of reading it. So, the question whether they did in the Beis HaMikdash or not, I saw Rabbi Tzvi Reisman in the Sefer Ratz Kitzvi, so he thought that maybe it was totally on the question of whether Shkolim is Daraisa or not, which is a tough thing to say. That Pashtus is Shkolim is for sure Drabbanan. That in general, we'll talk about this a little bit more as we get closer to the other parshias. You always hear that Kriya Satora is generally Drabbanan, with one exception, and that is Parsha Zachar. And sometimes you hear, well, maybe a second exception, maybe Parsha's Parah. So everyone's got to figure out what exactly the marker is for Parsha's Parah. Again, we could talk about that Bismano. So to say that it extends to Shkolim also is a lot harder to say. He quotes there one such source. There is a Tosfos in the beginning of the second parak of Brachos, which talks about Zachar and Parah. That's what starts off the whole discussion. That the Gemara says over there that there is possibly a din. It's Machlokas in the Gemara that there is possibly a din that Divrei Torah have to be B'lashon HaKodesh. So the Rishonim ask, what's the nafkamina of that din? You have to learn in Hebrew? No one ever said that. You can learn in whatever language you want. So what does it mean, Divrei Torah? Right. So what does it mean to say that Torah has to be B'lashon HaKodesh? So maybe it means Talmud. But the problem is, it can't really mean to lane, because the Gemara is darshaning psukim, and laning is not a chi of daraisa in general. So the psukim can't refer to normal kriya satora. So Tosfos and some of the other Rishonim, that's where they invoke, well, sometimes it is like zachar. So that's one of the sources that zachar, laning zachar is a dimana Torah. And some of the Rishonim, they also throw in their Parshas Para, which starts that whole discussion, where does Parshas Parah come from the Torah? So in the Sefer El Yezuta, so he says that, yeah, the Rashba says, over there, the second parak of Brachos, he says, like Zachar and Parah, what he really means is like all the Dal Parshas, like Zachar and Parah and Shkolim and Achodesh. So it's not the strongest marker in the world that Shkolim is Daraisa. But if it is Daraisa, so then presumably we have to say that we've been doing it the same way all along, and then there's Manabais. They lane Shkolim as well, and that's the story. But if it's Drabbanan, like it probably is, then it's more possible that they did it in the Beis HaMikdash. They did not do it that way in the Beis HaMikdash, but that we then, after that, instituted a Kriyas HaTorah of Shkolim to evoke what was done in the Beis HaMikdash. Hi.
Is there anyone that further explains all these to this Binyan, what mitzvah or what?
Yeah, don't know. That's why it's hard to hang too much on this, because it's not a very widespread source, and we wouldn't even know where it comes from. So it's very unlikely. And we will discuss that most of the Rishonim probably held that Zachar is Drabbanan. You know, even Zachar, where we have such a strong tradition to treat it like a Daraisa. But to extend it to Shkolim is hard. Lamais, the post can talk about it in both cases. You know, the whole question whether a Bar Mitzvah boy can read Zachar, because the question is whether we trust that a Bar Mitzvah boy is actually a gadol on the level of Min HaTorah. So if Zachar is an obligation of Min HaTorah, so maybe we can't let a Bar Mitzvah boy read it. So the post can talk about not only Zachar, should we say by all the Dalai Parashias, or should we say by Para, should we say by Shkalim? It's a whole discussion that would be one of the possible Nafkamina. But again, it's there's not a lot of support to say that Shkalim is Daraisa. Hi.
If you say whether or not you say the Dalai Parashias is Derban and Daraisa, does that any at all way affect the machlokas, whether it's a chiyav al tzibur kreshet or a chiyav yachid? Does that make us more machmir?
Yes or no? I mean, it's probably that for different reasons. That even if you say that kriyas haTorah in general is a chovas al tzibur, so as they say, some of the achronim have the language by Parsha Zachar that it's a chovas hayachid hanaisis b'tzibur. That it's different from kriyas haTorah. So that may have nafkaminas in terms of whether the ola b'chaim I think was machmir for Zachar. That the Ola should not read along with the Bal Kore. That normally the Bal Kore and the Ola read together for a normal Kriyas HaTorah. But if I remember correctly, Reb Chaim had a Kpeda that he felt that in this case the Ola is a Chiv to listen to the Kriyas HaTorah as a Chobos HaYachid, so he is obligated to hear it from the Bal Kore. Not everyone was mocked for that, but that's, there is the assumption that they do have a different structure, that it's not necessarily the same kind of Chiv. So, if you say, like the Sefer Achinuch, that it's not just a zecher to the reading of Shkalim, but it's a zecher to the Nesinas HaShkalim, to the actual act of Shkalim, so then what the Sefer Achinuch seems to be saying, and what the Lavush spells out even more clearly, is that this is an aspect of Neshama Parim Sfaseinu, that we say that nowadays that we can't bring Karbanos, so how are we to attain the atonement that comes from the Karbanos? So the Gemara says, Neshama Parim Sfaseinu, the mission in the end of Menachos, that we should study the themes, and that allows us to attain the same effect, so to speak. So through that, through reading about the Karbanos, learning about the Karbanos, so we have credit as if we brought the Karbanos, so too, maybe by Shkalim we have the same idea. Shkalim is a Kapara, and to get the Kapara, if we can't bring the Shkalim themselves, so we learn about them. So that's an interesting question then, what exactly is the Kapara of the Shkalim? You find in the Sfarim a couple of different ideas as to what the Kapara is, and Rabbi Reisman talks about this in his Sefer, that on the one hand you find it invoked as a Kapara for the Chet Egel. You find it invoked as a kapara for Mechiras Yosef. You find it invoked as a kapara in the general sense, that since the Karbanos bring a kapara, and the Karbanos are paid for with the Shkalim, so therefore the Shkalim are the key to kapara. Or you also find it in the sense that we mentioned before, in the Gemara Megillah, that it was anticipation of Haman's Shkalim, and it was a way to address that. So you can mix and match any of those four different types of kaparas, but perhaps what you see here is a couple of different ways of understanding how the Kapara works. So on the one hand, you could say, especially to look at the Haman example, so the Rashi of the Karambiavna of Goldwicht has a whole essay about this in one of his Svarim, or a couple of Svarim, he comes back to this theme a couple times, that the idea of Hikdem Shiklehem L'Shiklolav, that God made us have the opportunity to take Shkalim before he did. It's funny also because the whole reference of Shkalim in the story of Purim is really a very minor reference. The idea that Haman is willing to pay for this zchus to destroy the Jews, that's not the key issue that really scared us so much. In the Gemara and elsewhere, there's a lot of emphasis placed on this. So the Rashi has a whole essay there where he explains that koach hanesina, the koach hisbatlus, a person is willing to set aside his own needs and to give something that he has to somebody else. So there's a tremendous power that comes from that, from the Mesiras Nefesh that's involved when somebody says, I'll give up what I have to someone else in order to effect the goal. So it's a powerful force. And Haman, having that sense of Nesina, even though it's to a terrible end, but that could have given a lot of steam to the whole thing. That could have given a lot of power. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us before that, so many centuries before that, that we should be involved in Nesina for good things, and that our Koach HaNesina, as represented by the Shkalim, is going to have this effect of counteracting Haman's Nesina. And one could invoke that in the context of the Chet HaEgel as well, because part of the magnitude of the Chet HaEgel was the fact that the Jews donated precious items towards it and gave it a lot of power from that sense. So there as well, one could say that we offset that Nesina with this Nesina, giving to Kodesh instead of giving to Avodah Zarah, is itself a kapar. But the other component, and I've made this what you alluded to before, is that one can say that kapara comes through achdus, through the fact that you have to all come together towards a common goal. That itself is also, as we know, something that is mechaper. And this is something we find in Hilchos Purim, that when it comes to Shalach Manos, there's a famous discussion about what the purpose of Shalach Manos is, that the Chasam Sofer has a tshuva, which we don't have time to go into in detail now, but the Chasam Sofer had a whole discussion what the purpose of Shalach Manos is. Either it's to help with the Purim Suda, he quoted that idea from the Trumas Hadeshin, or it is in order to bring the Jews together. Because Haman said, there is this nation that is scattered and they presumably don't have divine support and we can kill them. And so therefore it says the Manos Salevi, who was the author of the L'chadodi, Chasam Sofer quotes from him, that in order to fix this attribute that Haman said about the Jews, that they are all scattered and dispersed, so we want to make friends, so we want to give gifts of food in order to create bonds among people. So Rabbi Isaac Chaver said that that was shot here also on this, that God says, I will make them take shkolim in anticipation of Haman's attack. He says a reference to the same idea, that when Haman said the Jews are scattered, so the Jews come together through the Machzor HaShekel, that will offset this attack of Haman. So in all these senses of the word, the Shkolim could represent a kapara, and therefore perhaps this is the idea that if we don't have it in actuality, even though we do have it on two levels, because we do have a practice of Zeichel L'Machzor HaShekel, we do have a practice of giving to Tzedakah itself in anticipation of the Shkolim, and to that extent, we're looking for a evocation of the original value of the Shkolim in two ways. The actual tzedakah that we do through Zeichel Matzah HaShekel, and the reading of the Parshas HaShkolim in the sense of Neshama Parmas Foseinu, we study the themes of the Shkolim. Both of those are attempts to try to keep alive and keep relevant to us the kapara that comes from the original Matzah HaShekel. The Torah Tamima comments that it's interesting, so we have the practice of the Zeichel Matzah HaShekel, even for Nashim and Ketanim, who are not necessarily a part of the original Matzah HaShekel. So you're right, it's okay, this is not the actual mitzvah itself, but the Zeichel Anes, so therefore we can extend that to people who were not chayiv in the original. There is a big discussion about who's chayiv in the original and possible halachic nafkaminas, because Rabbi Akiva Eger quoted from the Vesamim Rosh. Vesamim Rosh was a forgery, really, that was attributed to the Rush, but was presumably not written by the Rush. But in the Sefer Vesamim Rosh, so it's written that Ketanim were not a part of the Machzor HaShekel, and even big Ketanim, meaning that people younger than 20, even if they were older than 13, they didn't give the Machzor HaShekel, so therefore he asserts that they are pater from Musaf. That since the tefillah of Musaf is connected to the Karbanos, and the Karbanos are paid for by the Machzor HaShekel, so Ketanim, again, I mean old Ketanim, teenagers, were not involved in Machzor HaShekel, so therefore they're pater from Musaf. That's a very big chiddush. You could also extend it further and say, if it's not, if they're not chayiv in Musaf, why are they chayiv in anything? Weren't all the tefillos connected to Karbanos? So that, as later Sfarim point out, the other tefillos of the daytime have other sources, the Avos and it's Rachamim. So the three daily tefillos are Rachamim, so that fine. But the Musaf, which is purely carbon based, so then maybe Ketanim should be Pater. So there's a whole discussion, maybe women should be Pater also then. Tzlach says that for other reasons. Tzlach says women are Pater because the mitzvah says as man grama. But this idea that below 20 is Pater for Musaf, that would be a very big chumrah, because you would then say that, especially if you have a bar mitzvah boy who's a Shabbat Zacher, so he can't lay in the maftir and he can't have a musaf for the amud, you're really going to mess up his bar mitzvah pretty extremely, going to leave him with too much to do. So, and then if you want to extend the parsha shkalim, so you can say that bar mitzvah boy this Shabbos can't daven musaf, can't learn shkalim, so you're really taking away a lot from him. So this has not really been a widely spread attitude. There were those who pointed out, there's an opinion in the Gemara, Mr. Gachanan has a truth about this, there's an opinion in the Gemara that says that the Kohanim didn't take the shkalim either. So then you're going to say that the Kohen also can't be motzi anybody in musaf, he's also not chayiv. So again, most do not accept this, and the general assumption is that we don't apply this position. Hi.
Did Tzlach mean that Lamaisa?
By women being Pater? Maybe, yeah, I think he did mean it, but again, so that doesn't mean that they can't daven as a Nadava, or daven as a Inimit Shulviosa, but maybe he did, I think he did mean that there.
Let's say if a woman has to rush home from Shul to get a meal ready or something, would that be a...
Presumably, according to him, yeah, I mean, not everyone agreed. There was also my focus, but the Slach meaning Lamaisa, I think so. So, we'll just mention one more point. So, the Torah tells us that, you know, Hashir lo yarbeh hadal, you know, that the rich can't add on, and the poor can't take away from it. They all have to give exactly a machzeh shekel. So the Torah Tumimah raises the question that that's obviously the case, because if it's meant to be a census, so you can understand that you can't have people giving more or less because it'll mess up the numbers. So he suggests that it means that even if they were to make a deal that the rich guy is going to tell the poor guy, listen, I'll cover you, and you don't have to give, and I'll give for you, so the numbers will come out the same. Still, that can't be. Everyone has to participate. Everyone has to connect. And we know we have this imagery that the half shekel represents the fact that nobody is really full without anybody else, and that there is the power of the tzibur, that we all need each other. We're all just a half by ourselves. And there's Nayim Otara comments, and we'll close on this, that the usher, one might argue, this is a little bit of a, maybe an anti-rich person bias, but you might think that the wealthy people are probably involved in more activities, they probably have more to be mechaper for than the poor people do. So the fact that the poor and the rich have this equal kapara here, so isn't that a little bit surprising? So he suggests that this itself is a kapara, the fact that the usher is only allowed to give on the same level as the ani, and that he's used to being treated with so much more respect, and here he's only allowed to give on the same level as the ani, that itself is a sublimation, that itself creates a humbling effect, and that itself is what brings about the kapara. So in any event, all of these ideas are relevant to us as we fulfill the obligation of shkalim the Shabbos, whether it's the Reis or the Rabbanim, Zeich HaMikdash, in which way. In any event, it helps connect us to the kapara of the Machzeh Shekel. The Binyan Shlomo, we mentioned the other day, Shlomo in Vilna, he had a diuk that the Pasuk says, L'chaper al nafsho seichem, twice. He says, why is that? He says, the first is the Zman HaBayis, and the second is the remez to the idea that even not Zman HaBayis will always be an option to get the kapara through a zecher of this experience. So we should have that in mind as we lay in shkalim the Shabbos, that we are connecting to the tradition of the shkalim going all the way back to the Torah, and that, again, all the themes of all these parashiyos, that even if we're not able to use the big day kahuna, we're not able to bring the kabanos, we're able to study these topics and to hope that they can have the effect on our personality that's intended, and we should be zochet to fully realize their messages. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful